Kia ora and welcome to the Athlete Development Show podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Craig Harrison, sports scientist, coach, and researcher focused on the developing athlete. If you follow Super Rugby in New Zealand, then you're very likely familiar with the Crusaders' legacy, a franchise that has achieved incredible success over the last two decades. On the show today, I'm speaking with the man behind the Crusaders Academy, Aaron Webb. Aaron is responsible for leading the academy program that develops over 50 young men each year, assisting them to reach their goals to become professional rugby players. The program operates in line with the New Zealand Rugby Union's six pillars of development: technical, tactical, physical, nutrition, mental skills, and holistic life skills. When I talk to people about development, sometimes I get a real sense for the genuine care and love that is created inside environments. With Webby, this is definitely the case. You'll get a sense for how he places so much importance on the relationships that he holds and the influence that he can have on the people inside his program. He shares some of the ways that he does that, why he believes it's so important, and the outcomes that result of doing so. This is a conversation about the artistry of people development. Aaron, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks, Craig. I'm pretty excited to be here. I've listened to a number of your episodes over the last sort of 4 or 5 years. So yeah, thanks for having me on.
I'm super excited too. We met a few years ago now up at AUT Millennium in Auckland, where we had an opportunity just to sit down and chew the fat over development, which was super cool, and since have run into each other a couple of times. So we're going to jump right into it today. I know you're coming from us from Taupō at an under-20s franchise rugby competition, which you just mentioned before you're in the final, so all the best for that. So I'm interested, Aaron, you've spent 10 years managing the Crusaders Academy, and in that time, I'm sure you've seen a changing young person coming through the ranks, perhaps. I'd love to start there and just hear from you as to, you know, some of those big changes you have seen over your time with the Crusaders.
Yeah, I have seen some really big changes, actually, in the young people, but probably also in our sport as well. So there's a bit of both there. I think the young people that we're dealing with today are so much more open, so much more self-aware of who they are, where they fit in society, what they want from their sport and what they want from their coaches and the people that are training them and all of those things, compared to a decade ago when I started. They were pretty much just yes men. You know, they came along and we said do this and they said yep. You know, whereas now they're more inquisitive, they're far more prepared for probably the journey that we're trying to take them on, which is a balanced journey between their sport, their career, their education, you know, with the view to being a professional sports person at the end of it. But they're really integrated into that now, and I think there's a number of reasons for that. Obviously, society's changed significantly over this 10-year period with technology and our willingness to be open and honest around our mental health and our well-being and those kind of areas. But also, I think they've been better educated in the at home and in the education system to acknowledge what they want rather than just sit there and take what people are going to give them. So it's been quite, I think, fascinating in one way, but for us and me, I'm in my early 50s, it's been really refreshing to try and learn how to connect really well with the new generation.
Is this the school institute or academy program where these things are popping up, or do you think they're getting it from just general experiences across, you know, social media, conversations with people further abroad that they now have access, you know, easy access to? Like, where is that coming from?
I think it's a real mixture of what you've just talked about. I believe that from what I've seen, the schools have done a really good job in starting to integrate athlete development into their curriculum program. So either through the sport sort of PE sport slash health area, there's a lot more understanding that if you're going to, it's a job, you know, to be an athlete now, it's a realistic job opportunity for some people. So for them to be able to function highly in their job, they need to have a set of skills that aren't just the sport skill. So schools, I've seen doing a really good job of that. I've also seen it outside of the schools, and our sports have got better, absolutely. I think, you know, a decade ago, we were all just looking at the talent and going, oh yeah, this is great. They can do this, they can pass, they can catch and run. Whereas now we're, you know, most of us are looking at the character more than the talent these days. And I think you're right, in general life, these young people are exposed to so much more than when I was, you know, finding information when I was a young person was, you know, that was a long time ago. So it was encyclopedias and things like that. But, you know, social media gives them access to so much more. Obviously, the internet, you can find out pretty much anything you want. And I think adults are way more encouraging of the conversations nowadays. And, you know, so I think there's more learning for them there as well.
One of the big changes I think we've seen is, as coaches, we've gone from information givers to information filterers. I'm curious as to what the change in the young person has meant for you as someone who's, you know, in charge of the system. Like, how have you changed, like, in your philosophy and the way that you coach and work with young people over the time that you've spent with the Crusaders?
Yeah. Significantly changed, maybe even backflipped. I think, you know, I wouldn't call myself autocratic, but when I first came in, I was pretty prescriptive as a coach or mentor or educator. Whereas now I'm exactly what you just talked about. I'm an information giver, and we teach these young men, and I only work with the male program, but the women in our organization as well, the young men and women, we teach them that to learn how to filter the information that they're given, because as you know, any young person can be given a number of different bits of information, and they've got to be able to understand where they go to and what's the best for them, rather than just taking everything and trying to do everything.
I'm curious, working in the development space, how we make decisions around the filtering of information versus some key pieces of information that perhaps we do need to be a little bit more directive around giving. And so in your experience, have you seen, you know, pieces of the development puzzle that players are still missing when they're coming into your environment?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that when they get to us, you know, they come in on a continuum, and they're all in different places, depending on their life history, their family backgrounds, education, you know, all of those experiences that you, many of your guests have already talked to you about. But I think our job is to try and understand where they come in on that continuum, and then help guide them in their filtering process. So some of them are quite advanced and they already know how to filter information and get what they need, and others don't. You know, they come in maybe from a smaller setting or a smaller school where they might have had one coach for the last 7 or 8 years. You know, they've come through their club and their school in a smaller town. And so they have just taken every piece of information that they're given, because that's all they've ever known. And all of a sudden they're put in a program where 10 different people are inputting information, and they have to learn how to find what's important. And one of the things we talk to our young athletes about is, in your first 18 months with us, you're going to experience this overload of information, and you're going to be trying to do everything. Try to take some things, have a go at it, and you might filter and take the wrong things, but that's okay, because you've got time. As a developing athlete, you've got time to kind of have that trial and error process going on. And as they get more mature and the frontal lobe starts to come into being, for the males especially, they start to make better decisions on what they are filtering and what they're taking. And I really see that 21 age bracket in our group as something that really, really takes off, where they make really good decisions.
We know, you know, adolescence is stretched, particularly for the young male athlete. you know, up to the ages of 25 and above for some, but 21 for you, like that's 3 years into your program for a lot of athletes, isn't it? And so what does that mean for those 3 years when you're having to make decisions around selections, keeping athletes in the system versus exiting? How do you give them space to learn and to grow and make these decisions and fail, but make sure that, you know, you're still making good decisions around which players are going to continue to grow and prosper and those that may not?
Yeah, patience. that's a really critical part for us as a group of staff members and an organization as well. And it's something that we talk about every day in our program, is having the patience to allow young people to, for want of a better word, to fail and learn and grow from it. We're probably relatively lucky that there's a fair degree of physical development that has to occur in our players before they can handle the rigors of our sport. So we really do have 3 years to be able to develop them physically enough. So some of that psychosocial development and decision-making and all of those things sits alongside that. So it does provide us with a little bit of time. I know some other sports, you know, there's not physical development requirement. So, you know, maybe they enter younger, but our young men have to make so many decisions in such a short time on the field under a lot of physical duress that for them to be able to do that, they actually have to have a bit more of a mature brain and they need to have at least started the connections to the frontal lobe. And you know, they don't really get to that probably really, really mature stage around their frontal lobe until they're in their late 20s. But if we don't give them the opportunities to grow at 20 and 21 through making mistakes and having the opportunity to reflect and learn, then we're doing them a disservice. And a big part of what we do is our job is just to kind of nurture that process and allow them to know that it's okay to do that, because they've come from, most of them have come from places where they never want to fail.
Mm. Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's definitely that I'm something I've seen more and more of, is this this real fear of getting things wrong because of the consequence of what that might mean for, you know, for tomorrow. I'm curious, like I remember we sat in a cricket forum not that long ago and we were talking about the average age of the Black Caps. I think it was like 27 and a half, which is late, right? And it's got older over the last 10 years. And then and you talked about this idea of, well, we don't have that time necessarily in rugby because of the physicality that's involved. How does rugby being a really physically, you know, dominant sport change the way that you think about development? Because I'm curious, like you mentioned that you've got time to develop the psychosocial elements of a player because they need to get to a certain point physically. Like in some, it's almost, it seems to me like in rugby, that's a very obvious part of the game. But there's lots of other sports where the physical piece is important, but you can almost get away with not having it, or at least it's not as obvious to the naked eye. Yet perhaps it should be. Perhaps we should give some athletes more time to develop their physicality so that we're not getting as many injuries, so that the performance goes up, but they go out and play regardless. How does rugby sit uniquely compared to some other sports because of how physical the game is?
Yeah, I do believe it is quite different. And yeah, we were in that cricket forum and I remember us having that discussion. And I feel like rugby is unique in the combat nature of it, but it still requires maturity and all of that, not just decision-making, but just mental maturity to be able to handle pressure and all of those things. And I know in the cricket instance, you know, we talked about the older players and the Black Caps being able to mentally fight through challenging situations and things like that. And it's a different game, obviously. And rugby goes so much quicker. So you don't have the need on the field so much to be able to, or to have to do that. It's more probably between games and, you know, you've got a week, and week can be a long time for these these younger athletes. So I think to answer your question, I think we've got a unique opportunity with our young people from sort of 21 to 32 to really impact their lives and their value system and all of those things while we've built them into a physical beast, if you want to call them that. But it's actually the performance gets so much better once they start to understand themselves as a human being. And that's what I think we do a lot of in our program is open doors for them to understand who they are. Because they come in at 18 and they've got no clue really who they are. And what I get a kick out of is seeing an 18-year-old versus a 21 or 22-year-old, and that 21, 22-year-olds really starting to understand who they are, what they offer to the team, what the strengths of their game are. I think every player, when they come into our program, I ask them what their point of difference is, and they have no idea. But by the time they're 21, they do have a really clear idea of that. And then that changes as they go through their career, obviously, because there is a physical decline, or maybe they lose some speed. So they change their game and they're more tactically aware. So that becomes a strength of their game.
I'd love you to take us inside some of the processes of facilitating that growth, because for me, that character development or the self-awareness, the self-expression, like all of these ideas that we know are really important from a human development point of view. Sometimes they're hard to understand if when you're trying to look for them, when you're trying to see them. Like, it's much easier just to put someone in the gym and develop some muscle than it is to give someone the tools to understand themselves. So how do you do that? And it seems to me that that's a hallmark of the Crusaders is really like living true to this idea of developing people. So I'd love for you to just talk to that idea a little bit.
I think clearly in our organization, the number one thing is caring about the person. That's where we start. Everything starts from there. So if we take the time to get to understand their background and who they are and what drives them and what holds them back and all of those things, then we can start to unpack some of that stuff in conversation with them. And so care is number one, and I believe, like all good parents, the second part is time, is investing time in our young people. And like you say, it's really hard because you've got a lot going on in a program, and our 80% of our players are at university as well, and the other 20% are working. So they've got a lot of other commitments. But what we try to do is really invest quality time in them. And what happens from the care and the quality time put together is you get a vulnerability aspect to your relationship with that young person. So they're more open to sharing and what they're struggling with or what they want to grow and develop. And we're more able to share with them around where we think they need to grow or what might be holding them back from achieving the outcomes they want. And I would say 80% of the time it's not physical, it's mental, psychosocial, whatever you want to call it. It's in that space. So we invest a lot of time in just conversations. I try to think about my work breakdown in a week, and I think probably 30% of my time might be spent on technical rugby stuff, maybe. And the other 70% of it would be spent on life skills, relationships, helping young people understand themselves. So yeah, that's kind of how we do it.
Do you have specific tools and tactics for doing those types of things? Like you talk about conversation, and I just think that conversation in and of itself is undervalued. Obviously, your skills to be able to facilitate a conversation that opens up opportunity for vulnerability and those sorts of things, I think is goes without saying. But how do you actually facilitate those things? Is it purely just with sitting with players and talking? Or are there activities that you give them? Is there learning that they need to go home and work on? Are there ideas that they have to explore? Like, how does that work inside your academy?
There's a number of things. So we've got some processes in place that allow us to have regular meetings with our players. So we call them IPPs, individual performance plans, so fancy name for goal setting. But we have four of those meetings a year. A player will have a regular catch up with one of the staff members monthly, and then on the other 2 weeks of that month, they're having game reviews. So there's three really critical, I guess, meeting times that are scheduled in, where we have the opportunity to discuss and chat about their goals, about their game, and about them as a person in a month. So what tends to happen with that, and this is probably going to sound a little bit strange, but I always do mine sitting beside them. I never would sit face to face with them. And people are kind of probably going, oh, what's he on about? But that takes completely away any kind of conflict or challenge to the player and the person. And they're just, it's like we're in a car, you know, we're sitting beside each other. And if we think about it as kids, some of our best conversations with our parents were probably in a car where we didn't have to look them in the eye. So I've always been big on that. And it's really interesting because I have a 30-minute slot for game reviews with the players. And I reckon we probably do 15 minutes of game talk, if that. And the other 15 or 20 minutes is just life, what's going on, how they, you know. So, yeah, we have some systems set up to initiate the opportunities. And then it's up to our individual skill set as people on how we draw them out and what we're looking for. And then as a staff, we then connect weekly and discuss all of our players, the holistic needs, I guess we call it. And so, again, there's probably very little rugby talk in there. It's all about them as a person and how we can challenge them to grow, or where we need to support them better, what do we need to draw out of them. So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that goes on. And then some of it is just purely by skill of the individual that might be talking to them as well, and understanding what they're trying to pull out of the person.
Mm. Is there anything that you've worked on specifically in order to, you know, facilitate those conversations better? Or is it just a product of experience?
For me personally, it's a product of experience. Yeah. I think that, you know, I've worked in the education system and over a number of years, and probably grew some reasonably good skills there on how to assess people and understand them. And I look at the staff that I have in my team as well, and I believe they are the same. They're building a toolbox of experience that gives them the opportunities to see something and then pull on that thread. And I think we really work as a team, so we're often helping each other grow that skill set. So I'm sharing mine and some of the others are sharing theirs. So, yeah, we're picking up stuff off each other all the time. But, I couldn't tell you something specific that I've kind of worked on. I think it's just evolved over time.
It's always interesting, eh? Like, there's a lot of people listening in that, earlier on in their career as coaches. And I think one of the things I think about a lot is whether those types of skills, for some reason innate to the individual, and, teachers, for example, like, there's a certain type of character that's required to sit in a classroom of 25 young people and deliver education in a way that connects. And there's a huge range, I think, in inside teaching. Some teachers that can do that, other teachers that potentially aren't quite as crafty when it comes to some of those ideas. Do you recruit based on, like, for your staff, do you recruit and look for those characteristics from the outset, or do you believe that time inside your system develops them?
It's definitely a bit of both. Yeah, in the first instance, I look for certain characteristics in the staff. So, yeah, if just might be easy to use strength and conditioning here as an example. I would happily sacrifice some of the skills and knowledge in the strength and conditioning space for the right people characteristics in that person, because if they're willing to be open to learning, collegial in their approach, sharing of information, but also really caring about the person, then that's going to set them up, because they can learn all of the technical S&C skills that they need, either from within our organisation, from other S&C staff, or from professional development outside. But finding the right characteristics to want to learn and want to grow and want to care about our players as people is a lot harder to find, or a lot harder to develop. So kind of I like them to have a little bit of that already before they start with us. Yeah, so we do a bit of both, but within our organisation, there's a really strong internal growth process. So, yeah, that's part of who we are as well.
I'm curious around how you would think about developing an environment for young people that want to work in sport. So we have a program at AUT that looks at an internship in strength and conditioning for a postgraduate student. I talk a lot with my colleague around the types of environments that we feel could be really supportive to develop the skills that you're talking about. Because I think we are living in a world now where the technical elements can be learned anywhere. And I think education needs to keep up with the times. And it can't just be about, you know, the X's and O's of strength and conditioning in this particular case. It needs to be that other stuff as well. So if you were setting up an environment, and I guess you could look inside your own environment and say, hey, like these things are happening. Like, how would you be more specific around teaching those skills? Like, does anything come to mind?
Firstly, we are a people business, and that's what I talk to anyone I interview. I say, well, what kind of business do you think we're in? You know, if they go straight to the sport part of it, then I'd be concerned because we're a people business. That's what we do. Yep, sport is our mechanism that we're working with people in, but we're first and foremost about the people. So I think for me, whenever you are training people or guiding them in and around the space, I always talk about the art of what they're doing rather than the science. And I've got a mentor of my own, a guy called Brent Frew, who was a coach educator for Canterbury Rugby for years. And him and I talk a lot about it, and this has come from him, not from me. And he always talks about the artist in the room rather than the scientist. And he says, all of your staff can be scientists because they've trained in, if it's might be mental skills, or it might be coaching, or it might be strength and conditioning. But he said, what's the artistry like? Do they have the skills, or can they build the skills to understand the person standing in front of them rather than just looking at the athlete? So we do work a lot internally on those skills. And I think, you know, like any learning environment, there's a degree of osmosis. So if you're around people that have those skills, you automatically are learning some of them anyway. But there's also, we have to be really direct and specific about what we're trying to learn in that space as well. And in our team particularly, we're really good at sharing. So we, once a month, we have a little sharing opportunity where one of our staff provides PD to the rest of our staff. And that's, I love it because I'm learning. You know, most of my staff are in their 30s and I'm in my 50s. So I'm learning from them. And then maybe there's some stuff from my experience that I can share that they can learn as well. So that collegial approach for us in a workplace is really important. But I think in an education environment, I totally agree with what you're saying, is you want your people to learn not so much the X's and O's, because we can all develop and grow those at any stage. It's the other stuff.
And how do you think about teaching the artistry to a player when oftentimes a young person is just after the information to be more of a scientist, if that makes sense? And I remember in our conversation a few years ago, and this may have changed, but you talked about players coming out of school that had been programmed in a way that you were having to undo. So I'm curious as to whether that's still happening. And then again, like this idea of helping the player to be an artist as opposed to someone that just joins the dots. Is that something you think about as well?
Yeah, it is. I would say that a lot of players coming out of school are relatively programmed, but not, it's probably actually decreased since we spoke. And in a little bit, even in our environments, we're starting to see that seeping away a little bit as well. We're like it still is a lot more structured than school rugby, but we are starting to see more decision making coming back into the game, whereas there was a period where it was, for want of a better word, overcoached. So they were losing their artistry, and they were very much running by the X's and the O's. I think for our players, in terms of them developing that side of their skill set, probably goes back to what I talked about earlier on around us allowing them the opportunity to grow skills that aren't necessarily just on the field. So if I give an example, leadership's a big part of development in our program. So we try to rotate a lot of our players through a leadership program where, A, they first learn to lead themselves, because that's the most critical thing to do as a leader, in my view, or in our team's view. So that's the first part of it. So that's where they start to develop some of that artistry of quizzing people to get information, or challenging their teammates to give information in a meeting, and drawing people, learning how to draw people out, because what 19-year-old does that? There's not very many of them, I don't think. There'll be a few, but not many. So, learning those skills. And then what we try to do is make them aware of the skills that they're learning, because, like I said before, there's a lot of osmosis happening, so they sometimes don't even know. But the more aware we can make them of what they're learning, the more specific their train of thought starts to become around, oh, okay, so I'm learning that skill. If I can add this to it, then all of a sudden I've got a bigger skill set sitting over here. And that they just become, I guess, very targeted discussions around those areas. And again, we're talking a continuum here. So there's some young men in our program that we can advance really quickly in leadership, and there's others that we're just trying to teach them to turn up on time, to know what they've got for the week, to how to organize themselves to do that, rather than us having to say, okay, be here at this time tomorrow. So yeah, there's a definite continuum in a team sport, and I've never really worked with individual athletes, so I don't know, but I'd imagine it would be, it's a case by case basis with individuals as well.
Have you developed a framework for these skills? Like, do you point to specific skills across different domains of development, leadership being one that you mentioned? Communication, I would imagine, would be another one. Like, do you have these skills that you look for in young people, or is it more of a sort of a bespoke go with the flow a little bit more about around what we actually see in the young person as they show up? I'm just curious as to, like, it's easy to go to the strength and conditioning X's and O's and say, hey, like, we need to develop some movement skill, and then we need to develop some endurance, and then perhaps some hypertrophy, yada yada yada, right? But now that we're talking much more about these psychosocial skills across the board, I'm just curious as to whether that is something that we can be more specific around in terms of building frameworks out. It's something I think about a lot, versus it just depends on the quality of our staff, right? You, Aaron, as a quality people person, we put you in the environment and you just do it for us. You know what I mean? Like this, I'm trying to understand how you think about that idea.
It's a really challenging thing in sport, I believe, what you're talking about, because I think we do really rely a lot on the person in front of the player, and the skill set that they've got, and where that might take the player. And you can look at it in coaching and strength and conditioning and all those other places, and it is a lot dependent on that. So we've tried to become more systematic in our approach. We're nowhere near where we would like to be, but we're growing, and that's what we're asking our players to do. So we've got to keep doing it too. So yeah, we've got a bit of a curriculum that we try to stick to, in terms of some key factors that we're wanting to grow and develop. So absolutely, leadership, communication, self-organization, self-awareness are probably the four critical parts to that curriculum. And then as we go along, it'll depend again where they come in on the continuum. So it does become a bit bespoke, as you sort of mentioned, to what that individual needs. So if I give an example, we might run a time management session for all of our newly inducted players, and we normally try to run that within the first 3 to 4 weeks that they're with us. Then what we do is we'll meet individually, and we've got a personal development manager, so she does a lot of this stuff along. I help her out occasionally, but it's a lot of the place that she works in, and so she would then tailor her individual meetings around time management with those players to help them grow their skill set in that area. So again, if I've come in on the continuum and I'm actually quite useful in that space already, then they might work on some, just the tip of the iceberg stuff and just doing that. Or we might even turn that player back to being a mentor and a guide for some other players that are, way back further down the continuum on time management. So yeah, it is really bespoke, and again, you are reliant on your staff being aware of what our athletes, what our young men are doing, and how they're functioning, and then being able to create opportunities for them to grow themselves as well.
Do you have ways of assessing these things? Like, is that something that you have incorporated into the system? And I'm like, whenever it comes to assessment, I'm always very cautious of how that gets used, because I think, there's two. I talk about this, like, there's two reasons that we use assessment. One is to reward the things we want to see more of, and two is to control the environment. And so, both of those things have their uses, but I think sometimes controlling the environment takes precedence, which is not always helpful. So, do you think about understanding where the player is in the journey of self-awareness, for example? Like, is that something that you talk about with the rest of your staff?
So my first answer to your question is no, we don't assess them. And we've talked about it, and we've gone through different iterations of trying it out, and we've come to the similar conclusion to what you've just said, is that we actually don't see any value in it. But what we do conversely to that is we try to understand the person in front of us, and we do some personality testing. We use what we call a dotting system. And what all that does is give us an understanding of the predominant way to communicate with that person, and then we build the relationship from there in that style. So like me, I'm a what they call a blue dot, so I'm quite a emotive feeling kind of person. I would talk about if I'm talking about something, I would talk about how I feel, not what it looks like, whereas a different color dot would say, "Oh, that looks like this." I would say, "Oh, that feels like this." So I've got that's how I operate, and that's how I like people to work with me. So, but what I've got to be able to do is operate in all four sectors, and so do our staff. So if we can then operate in the predominant way that player works, then we build a really good connection, and then everything kind of flows from there in terms of understanding. I guess we make an assessment in our minds of where we think they're at, but we don't have anything formal, and then we'll start to work from there with them. But I always go back to the point with when we're talking about it as a group, is what we're wanting to do is challenge our young people to take the lead and to take the reins, rather than us having to drag them along. We want to challenge them to actually get in the driver's seat and drive their own development. So we might challenge someone if we're talking about communication skills. In rugby, the nines and tens on the field are the game drivers, we call them. So they've got to be able to communicate in front of a group, and they've got to be able to stand up there and sell the message and sell the dream to the team. And if they don't have the skill set to do that, then we challenge them to find the opportunities to grow it. So yeah, that's how we operate around that space.
Aaron, where did your blue dot come from? Have you thought? I'm sure you've spent some time reflecting on, the journey that you've led. Like, has that been something that has always been the way that you've operated, or has it changed based off certain experiences over time?
I think it has changed and sort of meandered through my life. But I think, you know, clearly it would have come from home, from my parents when I was little, and the family environment I grew up in. I spent a lot of time through Cubs and Boy Scouts when I was a kid, and a lot of, I guess, the values of that were around service to other people and helping the community and all of those kind of things. And I was always quite a sensitive kid. I loved animals, and you know, we had a cat that died, and I was pretty upset, and you know, all those kind of things. And so I probably always was in this space, but as I've gotten older, my work is all focused on people. So I've always, I guess, had that understanding of that I'm quite a sort of a caring, nurturing type of person. And I like to guide people. I don't really like to tell them what to do. So I guess that it has. It's definitely meandered. And I have a secondary color, which is red, which is quite the opposite to blue. So they actually work quite well together, because I can be really detailed and prescriptive and planned in what I want to do, but I can then still have the people skills to go along with it, I guess. Yeah, I'm not sure if I answered your question there, but
absolutely, you did. I'm curious, like, what did your mum and dad do? Like, were they? I'm curious as to, you know, how they impacted your journey in different ways. Like, it's always interesting to understand the role mum and dad played, and I'm sure that you look into some of these ideas when you're assessing players, perhaps. And I'd love to hear a story or two about how you do that. But you know, in your own story, what was mum and dad's sort of role for you?
Yeah, mum and dad were, like, they were really supportive of everything that I've got an older sister as well that we did as young kids. But they weren't overbearing at all. They were really just there to kind of be the, you know, the bumpers in the Tenpin bowling lane. You know, when we got a little bit off to the side, they'd bump us back out to the middle, and just, they let us explore. Or certainly, I can only talk from my own point of view, but they let me explore life as a youngster. You know, they supported anything that I came up, any idea I came up with that I wanted to do, they would support it and give me the opportunity to do it, you know, transport me to wherever I needed to go, I guess paying for stuff and all of those things. But they were never overbearing, but they were also there if I wanted to talk to them about it or enthused about what I was doing. And I probably talked about rugby a lot when I was a kid, and they probably got bored senseless by it. But I never felt that, you know, I always felt supported. And I think that's what I really enjoyed about my childhood. I felt like I could, if I got excited about something, they would help make it happen. And then to the second part of your question, I look now a lot at what, when I'm looking at young people, what their family environment is. And, you know, I'll go and visit them in recruitment and see how they interact in the family environment and those kind of things, because it might not be the decision-making part of what we're doing, but it will certainly influence how we're working with that young person if we can understand their backstory a little bit of the family and the, I guess, the nature of the relationships, you know. And we've all seen it in sport, you know, you've got parents that are super, super involved and maybe too involved, and you know, don't let the young people grow their own skill set. And then we've got parents on the other end that were probably like mine, who just, you know, open the opportunities and the kids run with it. So, yeah, and we've got to understand what we're working with in that environment, because that'll influence how we operate and challenge that, you know, that young person. So, you know, if we've got a young person who's come from a family that's highly involved and they've never made a decision themselves, because it's always been their parents, then we will be challenging them a lot in that decision-making area and how to grow their skill set, be independent, be responsible for their own actions, their own decisions, you know, whereas they've never probably had that experience previously.
Is there awareness of, you know, in that particular example, is there awareness of where they're at in terms of their decision-making skills? Because I think that's always an interesting part, you know, that initial stage of, hey, like, we've got to get to a point of mutual understanding here before the challenge that I provide and that you try and make sense of is going to work. Can you talk to, you know, perhaps an example where that was hard and what you did about it?
Yep, that's probably where my red dot comes out.
Right.
And what I mean by that is I'll be really open. Blunt's not the right word because that's not what we do, but we're really clear, really open and honest with them around where we think they're at or what we've seen. And then what I always preface that with is I'm going to tell you what I think and what I've seen or other stuff we might do it, but I want you to tell me how it actually is in your home life. And often we'll be not too far off the mark, but there'll be a few subtleties that they might come back with that we haven't seen or don't know. So once you've had that conversation and you've kind of got to mutual agreement between the two of you, that's when you can then go forward with the, okay, where do we go to from here, Craig? What are you going to do to grow that area of your life that we've probably identified together between myself and the athlete? And then, we start to make a plan from there. So if I can give you an example, off the top of my head, we've had a couple of players who have come into our program. This was quite a long time ago, really involved dads. Dads were coaching them at home, and I said this. I remember sitting down with these two boys and said, right, this is what I'm seeing. What are you seeing? I remember one of them said, oh, I hate the car rides home. I go, what do you mean? And he said, I hate the car rides home from rugby because all it is coaching the whole way. And he said, I don't feel like my dad cares about me. He cares about how I play. And, you know, that kind of tugs on my blue dot a little bit. And we had a big conversation about how, and he goes, I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to tell my dad that I actually don't want him to coach me, that I've got other coaches that are way better and understand the game more in a modern sense than he does. So we just sat down and we over probably 6 months, so it wasn't just a one-off conversation, we just talked through little iterations of change for him with his relationship with his dad and how he's going to manage it. And all I tried to do, again, maybe because it's the way I grew up, is I was just trying to be the bumpers on the side, and he was doing the talking and I was just helping him guide his conversations. And in the end, they got to a point where he was able to say to his dad, hey, this is where it's at, Dad. This is what I need from you. I know you love me. I know you care about what I do, but I need to be able to focus on what I'm getting coached elsewhere rather than at home. And I just want you to love me and just support me. And, you know, I think it took a few months after that for them to kind of get into a routine, but it certainly improved hugely. And I guess that, if I think about that, that takes a lot of stress away from that young person, you know, because he wasn't playing good rugby because he was so stressed about this whole situation with his dad. And so, you know, if we can help them remove stresses or help them to have the skills to remove stresses from their life, then they can play better.
It's a story that resonates and something that I've seen a lot. And I think the difficulty in my world is because athletes are a stage of development prior to that, you know, you're talking about an 18-year-old who's probably left school and a little bit older, a little bit more worldly. You know, for a 14-year-old to be able to have that conversation with their dad is really, really challenging. Yeah, but I still think that those skills are things that we could start developing at younger levels, but obviously that takes time and some understanding and willingness from all people involved. One of the things that I'm seeing a lot of now is excess of information, because we're living in this world where information can flow so freely. And performance analysis is becoming this widely used technique across sports and younger and younger and younger in terms of where it's starting. And I just find that athletes are receiving so much information that they're becoming reliant on it. So if I've got a problem, then I'm going to look to the outside world in order to get the information so that I can solve it. But that's quite slow. And so I'm wondering whether this is something that you've seen, that you have discussions around, like how much information is enough compared to a young person that has to actually make decisions and solve problems when there's missing information, like when they don't actually know everything that they think they need to know, but they've still got to make a decision and learn from it. Like, is that something that's apparent in your world?
100% it is. Yep. And goes back to that, probably that conversation we had right near the start around young people learning how to sift and filter information, because there's so much coming in. And you know, I look at our coaching setups, you know, and I'm involved in underage programs for the Crusaders and under 18 and under 20 level. And, you know, with our coaching group, we talk a lot around how much is enough, because, you know, and it's just natural for coaches that they want to justify their role as a coach. So they, you know, they want to give more and do more and provide more information and all that. And we talk a lot in our age group programs is the male brain at 18 and 20 only has a certain capacity to take on information, and then everything else just goes out the back door. So what's, you know, we sort of have that that what's important question is always being brought up. And so debrief after every training, we talk about, okay, how did it go? What did we do? What's important going into the next training session? You know, and I'm talking X's and O's here now on the field, you know, because that's, you know, it's just such an easy trap to fall into as a coach. On the other hand, of our athletes, we say to them, we want you making decisions when you don't have all the information, because that's life. You know, we're all having to make decisions as adults with partial information. And what we talk to them about is backing themselves. You know, we would much rather you make a decision that might in the end be the wrong decision than not make a decision or, you know, procrastinate for weeks and weeks and weeks and then make the decision when it's too late. So I think it's Robbie Deans talks a lot about an idea or a decision committed to is far better than not committing, you know, and wasting time. So yeah, that's probably where we're at with all of that area.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see the evolution of that idea too, as things like AI and technology continue to advance, and just there's just so much access to information. And I mean, you go to a secondary school tournament these days and you'll see video cameras at the end of every court or field. And then that information is going straight back into the 16-year-old's debrief that happens, or they're watching games at night. I mean, this is happening at 11 and 12 years of age. Like, people are doing video analysis. So that was never a thing. And so, yeah, like the line between what's useful and what's just creating confusion and a reliance on data is just it's a central idea of mine that I'm thinking a lot about at the moment, and it's a super super interesting one.
I wholeheartedly believe that the number one reason that we want our kids playing sport is because it's fun. And you know, when I hear stories like that, it does make me cringe a little bit, because you know, that there's plenty of time for that stuff later. But, you know, at 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 even, they should just be out there having fun, you know, and just enjoying being with their mates, if it's a team sport or if it's individual sport, competing against themselves or whatever it is, or just, you know, getting better every day. That's part of the fun of it. And like, there's some great tools out there, and you know, the video generation is awesome, because these guys can learn so much from seeing themselves. But I think as the adults in the room, we have to take responsibility for saying, for trying to draw a line a little bit somewhere and letting our young people have fun. And I've got a 12-year-old daughter, and I could be super high performance focused with her because that's what I do for a job every day. But I just want her to play as many sports as she can, or wants to, and try out what she wants to. And she will make the decisions on what's fun and exciting and what she wants to keep doing. And it'll be because she loves it, and it won't be because I or my wife want her to do it. And it's such a hard concept for us to keep in the frontal lobe of our brains, or that front of our awareness as adults.
I shared a video that ESPN made just yesterday on, and it had this 9-year-old, and it was a 9-year-old at a press conference, basically announcing his retirement from sport. And then he talked about all of the pressures and the stress and the lack of fun that he was having. And it's curious as to where New Zealand is at with all of those things. And I mean, you hear stories, but it's just one of those things that I think is always there in the background. Is like, how do we keep as many kids as we possibly can in the game? And so from your point of view, like living and breathing rugby, like how do you feel about where rugby is at in New Zealand at the moment? Like, participation numbers in the youth game are down significantly. Are you seeing an effect of that at your level?
Not yet, but we will. And probably because the flow throughs, it's slowly getting there. But I think the level of talent at the level I work at, or perceived talent, is still as high as it's ever been. But maybe there's not quite as many individuals in at that level as there has been. Although at the same time, development is happening earlier in high school, so that's helped. But there'll be an absolute flow through, definitely. In terms of the state of the game, we've got some real challenges in our sport around the product. The way the game's played at the top levels, the rules, some of that stuff. If you look at other sports, they've been quicker to adapt to societal changes than we have. So there's some challenges there. Obviously, the contact aspect of our sport is really a challenge for us as well. The health and safety of our young people's paramount in any form of our lives, but should be in our sports as well. So, the way that we're trying to learn around concussions and all of that space is really important, and the technology has advanced quickly for us in the last probably 4 to 5 years in that area, that we've started to make some really good inroads into understanding way more about it. Our governing body's made some changes to rules, which will help in that area as well. But yeah, we've got some challenges like everybody else, but we need to adapt to what society is. And I think rugby's probably always had a bit of an old school mentality around the game, and if we don't adapt, then we'll start to lose more young people.
Yeah, particularly in Aotearoa, hasn't it? Like, it's rugby's always been the stronghold. I mean, that's what we all grew up watching and playing. And now again, technology has opened up the world to our young people, and all of a sudden, the EPL and the NBA and everything else is front and center of what they're watching on their phones. And it's just going to be interesting. I mean, that's having lots of effects across lots of sports. And I'm sure rugby are feeling that. So yeah, we are going to have to adapt. I just want to jump back into an idea around development. And like, if you were to think about the 2 to 3 years prior to when you start picking athletes up, which is an area I'm super interested in, and you were to go and spend some time teaching, those players certain skills, like what would they be? What do you think are the most important skills, characteristics, abilities for the 14 to 18-year-old, aspiring rugby player to really have in their toolkit?
Number one, I think, is spatial awareness. Being able to see the field in front of them, beside them, and maybe behind them, and understand how to manipulate or use space on the field. I think, obviously come from a little bit more of a technical background around some sports. So, that invasion game that we play, it's really important. So, some of our best kids at 13, 14, 15 year old age groups have played other sports before they've played rugby, football, hockey, basketball, even, they're all great sports for being able to see space in front of you and beside you. So that's number one. Hand-eye coordination, I think, is really important for us. I'm amazed at the athletic prowess of some of the players in our academy, yet they can't catch a tennis ball, or throw one even very well. So, we work a lot in that space, and certainly at that 13 to 15 year old age group, I think that's critical. And I guess it goes back to that philosophy that I have of playing as many different sports as you can, because you're going to learn a whole lot of different skill sets. Being able to work with a ball above your head for a line out forward and a loose forward in rugby is a really important skill. So some of our younger players that have played cricket and basketball and volleyball, they've got way better skill sets in those places. So, and I think the third one would be just the ability to work hard, to have work ethic, to really push yourself as a person to see where your limit might be, physically, mentally, and all those kind of spaces.
Can you teach that? Like, is that something that you can take an 18-year-old and progress them to, in the 3 years you have or so? Like, can you actually progress that to a point where they're ready to play first-team rugby and do the things they need to in order to be prepared and to recover and all of those sorts of things? Or is that part of your talent selection criteria?
It's not really work ethic is part of our criteria, but like the ability to push themselves and grow themselves is not. That's something that we do teach. Yep. And we do it in lots of different ways and lots of different environments. Some of it is peer led, some of it's led by us. Obviously there's quite a big competition aspect to our program, because they're trying to get to the pinnacle, to the top of Mount Cook. So they've got to be able to fight tooth and nail to get there. So there's that aspect of it. I 100% believe it's teachable, coachable, that area. And I see some guys that come into our program that, if you talk about some metrics, they can't push themselves past a 15 yo-yo score when they first get to us, but by the time they leave, they may be hitting 18 and a half regularly, because they've learned how to understand how to push their body. Obviously their body's grown and developed through that time too, but a lot of it's the mental approach to how do I push through the pain barrier, where is my pain barrier, all of the, they just don't know when they get there, because they've obviously probably had a significant amount of natural ability, and they've never had to work to the point where they need to beat the person beside them.
There's often an expectation that effort should show up in our environments, but we don't necessarily think about it as a skill that we teach. So I love that idea of going, hey, like, this is a skill, and we're going to scaffold your understanding to a point where you can level up. I think we need more of that across the board. I'm conscious of time, and you've got a recovery session to facilitate coming up soon, Webby. So just a couple of final questions. How do you think about balance? And we mentioned this right back at the start around some well-being ideas, but that may not necessarily come into how you think about balance. But either for you as a practitioner, because that's super important, but also for your players, what comes to mind when you think about balance?
I'll start with the players first. For me, balance, what comes to mind for me is that they're putting a maximum effort into their athletic prowess and development, and they're putting the same effort into their either education or career pathways. And with the little time they have left over, that they're putting some time into their hobbies slash interests outside of work and study or rugby, because that balance is going to make them a way better rugby player, a way better contributor to society, and way more intelligent in their workplace and educational environment, because they can clock into one and clock out of the other. And that's what I think is really critical about balance, is that when you're locked into your studies, rugby's gone, it's out of your memory for that particular time. And when you're locked into your rugby, your studies is gone out of your memory for that little bit of time. So, you know, like we as adults have to deal with, it's that becomes a stress relief mechanism if you can get away from something that's really challenging in your life and just be able to forget about it for a while. You know, a decade of doing this, I have seen every iteration and aspect of it. And, you know, the boys that I work with that have the best balance generally are the ones that go to the highest levels. The ones that don't generally become massive overthinkers, paralyzed in decision making because they're not clear, because they're overthinking stuff. They get tied up in knots, you know, with anxiety and all those other things as well, because they don't have a balance of relief of something else that's really important in their lives. And then for us, conversely, on the other side of that, the staff, we've got to be exactly the same. You know, we've got I would say my job's intense, and I love it, and that's a huge part of what gives me a kick every week. But like I said, I've got a young daughter, and I get just a kick out of spending time with her. I do some education outside of work for myself, so I'm trying to grow my own skill sets in some other areas, so working hard on doing that. And that hour and a half I do that every week gives me massive relief from working for the Crusaders. You know, and my mountain bike and my running are really important places for me to get away from rugby and work as well. So, and we might not get the time that we want. You know, I would love to mountain bike and run 40 hours a week and work 10 hours a week, but it's not that way around. So it's just about getting those little hits when you can, to keep your energy high or your cup full or whatever terminology you use.
Just finally, is the Crusaders a place that you know, you're still super fired up to be at? Like, is that something that you see in your future? Is rugby still a place that you want to be, or, you know, are you at some point gonna say, hey, look, I've got all these skills and I want to go and give them a crack in another domain, be it in sport or somewhere else?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I think when you've been in something for a decade, you're asking that question of yourself most days as well. Certainly from a motivational point of view, yeah, I love it. I probably look at it slightly differently to that. I work in people development, and rugby's the vehicle that I get to use on a day-to-day basis at the moment. So that's the way I look at it. I do love rugby as a game, but I've far more enjoy the people development side of what I do than the rugby side of it. So that, yeah, slightly different lens on it. I think over the next, you know, 5 years or so, I'll be looking to other things, because at some stage, someone else has got to come in and bring a new perspective to our club around the development of our young people. And, you know, I'm getting into my mid to late 50s, maybe I start to become a little bit irrelevant to young people. Hopefully I don't, because, you know, hopefully I'm evolving and changing too. But I think that, yeah, there's a natural evolution there. And I would like to be able to do some things in other places and business. And I've learned a lot about culture and what drives really good culture in organisations. And when I've worked with the Crusaders, and I'd like to, you know, to help some businesses grow in that space as well.
There's no doubt that those skills will be there. I think just looking from the outside into to the Crusaders, all of those things are clear and present. So, yeah, it's going to be super interesting just to watch your journey, Aaron. And I appreciate you taking some time out in the middle of a tournament week to come and have a chat on the show. Yeah, and so look forward to catching up again in person and chewing the fat. I always enjoy our discussions, and just want to say a massive thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, no problem, Craig. And, you know, just I'd probably just want to throw that straight back at you and say, you know, what you guys are doing with your research and this podcast in particular, and some of the other stuff you're doing is so necessary. You know, I look at youth sport and I don't think there's enough focus on that area of sports and the people. As I said right at the start, it's all about the people that work with our young people that make the difference. So I've learned so many things from your guests and just little pieces here and there that I've picked up. And so hopefully, you know, maybe someone can pick up something from what I've said today. But you know, you guys are doing a great job in this space. So keep it going.
Thank you.